Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour tonight. This is a forum for folks who are interested in the intersection between depth psychology, that is, connecting with archetypes or those possibilities of stories that show up in ourselves that we get particularly drawn to or drawn away from. So think about any archetypes that come up in the tarot, like the Empress or the Chariot, and think about how those stories relate to you, how those archetypes and energies have come up in your life, and you'll have an understanding of archetypal energies. Also, a second goal of Inner Voice is to connect with the energies of your intuition and help you to discover and grow your own intuitive muscle so that you're more aware and more choiceful about the possibilities in your life. So thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. I hope there's something that can spark you or allow you to see something in a different way. I do want to let you know what's coming up on Inner Voice, and that's a short list. I've had a big stream of folks wanting to be on the show, and we're at the very tail end of that, and so I have to find a guest for next week or figure out what I'm going to talk about if we do an in-house show. But then catch Inner Voice on August 28th for Kanta Bosniak. Kanta Bosniak is a wonderful writer. She's written a marvelous book called Abundance Triggers, which is all about those things that keep us from having that connection with that life that we're meant to live, and how to really understand from a felt sense perspective when we're in those places where we're triggered in terms of the energies that we want to draw into our life. She also just recently wrote a book of love poems, which I've heard wonderful things about and seen wonderful write-ups about on Amazon.com. So go take a look at Kanta's work, and I really look forward to having her on the show on August 28th. Now, with no further ado, I want to bring on our guest tonight. Tonight, my guest is Barbara Graver, and Barbara does a wonderful blog. Let me find it here, and I will, there we go, the New Age Review. And the thing that's so cool about Barbara's blog is she really is invested in her own inner work. If you open up her blog, it isn't just like a typical blog. She shows you readings that have come up for her and what she's gotten out of them. So it's really just a lovely blend of knowledge about the metaphysical along with how that knowledge has worked for her and led her in the direction that she's wanted to, you know, evoke and draw into her life. So I just really encourage folks to go check out this blog. It just really goes a step further than some others. So are you there, Barbara?
I am, Jenny. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. So excited and delighted that you chose to join us tonight. I want to ask you, this is a question that I ask everyone on Inner Voice. When you think about intuition and developing your intuition and the metaphysical world, that's a little bit off the beaten path. Would you say that you found this journey, or did it find you? How did you come upon it? What's that journey look like for you?
I think I would probably have to say it found me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of people, you know, I always, you know, had a pretty strong connection with spirit from the time I was real small, and throughout my life, intermittent experiences with spirit that were, you know, meaningful to me, but then life would kind of, you know, take center stage, and raising kids and working and all the things that people do, and I would put that on the back burner, and then it would sort of find me again. You know, I would have another experience, and you know, probably what happened was a few years ago, I had a really amazing dream, a spiritual dream, and that was the event, I think, that I couldn't really do that again. I couldn't really put my spirituality on the back burner and go back to, being more immersed in like the material world. And it's pretty much been ongoing since that point. But I would have to say, I mean, I consider myself sort of a seeker in mm-hmm. some ways, but I've gotten a lot of nudges along the way. So
awesome. So it sounds like that dream was a real catalyst for you and was kind of a shifting experience where all of a sudden some of those things that had been like kind of, poking at you in the background kind of took center stage more. Do you feel like sharing any parts of that dream or any energies in that dream?
Oh, sure. Well, the dream, it took place, a few years ago, and it was a very long dream. It was very coherent, unusually coherent, unusually vivid, and I feel that it was so unusual in comparison to other dreams I've had. I really felt that it was a spiritual dream. I felt it was, I believe that it indicated that I had, actually traveled, like soul travel within the dream. And it, it had a lot of symbology, but one of the things I think that was probably, strongest in the dream was color. And it just it was just something I couldn't ever really put behind me again. And every time I would kind of get to the point where, I did want to kind of go in a maybe a more conventional or materialistic kind of direction, I would remember that. And, I guess it's different than other experiences. For me, it was different.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of struck you differently.
It did, and I always think it's odd how people, and I think everyone does this, greater and lesser extents. People will have very, very strong either psychic or spiritual experiences, but I think we're so inundated and overwhelmed by physical reality. It's very easy to not so much doubt, but ignore. And, in my instance, I had strong intuition and I had experiences with paranormal energy and various things that were quite compelling at the time, but it's just very easy to get caught up, with everyday life and let those mm-hmm. things slip.
I think too, it's really easy to discount those intuitive nudges. I've noticed for myself recently that a lot of times I have like this kind of feedback system that automatically will discount a piece of information from spirit. I'll go, oh, that's just your monkey mind. And then I'll go, no, wait. What was that? What was that message? Let's get it back and, let's apply it and see. And I would say 7 times out of 10, those pieces of information that I was so quick to just say, oh, that's just extra, stuff, help me get closer to spirit and closer to my intuition. And have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have. And I think that, our intuition and those nudges are, can be so profound, but they're also subtle and relatively
yes.
subtle. I'm not always. I've had some experiences that kind of hit me over the head, but most of the time. And, we're surrounded by a world that is anything but subtle, that's often overwhelming, and in the pandemonium, I think, of,
yes.
Everyday life, it's easy to miss stuff and, like you said, to discount it because all our validation
yes.
is for the material.
Yes. And I think it's easy, too, to get caught up in other people's definitions of what's important. We have family, we have responsibilities, and sometimes those responsibilities overtake or trump, maybe in terms of time and energy, some of our intuitive, connections. But I think that intuition is so persistent. It might be gentle, But boy, you'll get the same message again and again and again.
Yeah, I think that's characteristic. I mean, that to me, that's always a characteristic of true guidance. Because
yes.
if I'm getting a message that's fear-based or, you know, anxiety-based or whatever it may be, or, you know, or something else that's maybe not quite that negative, you know, it's more mood-dependent. And, you know, I could get a strong feeling, and especially not so much now, but going back, you know, I would think, wait a minute, is this intuition or am I just worried, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And with time passes, you get more discerning, I think. But that, to me, is one of the characteristics of true intuition, is that it is persistent. And
yeah.
No matter how you're feeling, you know, if you can kind of quiet, it comes back.
Luckily. Yes, absolutely. The one thing I really, really admire about your blog is how many different topics you cover and you look into, you know. It's just such a thorough explanation of so many different ways of connecting with spirit. And I just am amazed at the girth, the amount of different ways that you do that.
Oh, thank you. That's great to hear. I think the blog was one of the few ways that being, like, kind of having that dilettante personality is actually a plus, because I do tend to, you know, I've always been one of my, you know, weaknesses, I think, is that I do tend to jump from thing to thing, you know, and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the blog, that kind of pays off. But I don't really make effort to cover a range of topics. I just mm-hmm. kind of let myself be guided by, you know, what I feel I need to learn. And I'm a great believer in I believe in sacred study. I believe it's valuable, but I believe intuition is valuable too. And if you can't combine the two, you know, what course of spiritual study works for one person won't work for another. And if
exactly.
you can't use your intuition to hop from thing to thing and get what you need from something, and I don't necessarily feel, you know, that you need to understand something from A to Z. You need to use your intuition and get in there and take what's helpful to you on your own path. And so the blog is great for that, because, you know, I'm able to do that and then share it. And in the sharing, the initial motivation for the blog was to help myself focus, which I'm not sure it did, but also to help myself, you know, articulate and think things through. Because, you know, in order to share something, you have to get some level of understanding out of it. And so doing the blog, you know, helped me with that. So I think it's helped me, you know, and probably more than it's helped anyone. And it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Thank you. That's really cool. I think it's so cool how you talk about there being this need to focus on a wisdom tradition, but also only if it fits what your needs intuitively are. I see so many people, when they start to seek for metaphysical or spiritual awareness, you know, just read so many books and so much stuff. And while that can be really, really a positive experience to just delve into everything, I think that what you're talking about what resonates for you is so important. And then the other piece of it is to really notice energetically when maybe you're done with something and you're able to set it aside and move on to another place where there's an intuitive resonance. And I think that you find that balance and that harmony so well.
Oh, well, thank you. I think too, you know, often it's when you're done for now, and you
yeah.
may, you know, you may be immersed in something and think, you know, I used to say if you get one good idea out of a book, it's worth reading, and I believe that. But, you know, there are a lot of books that are worth rereading, and, you know, I know with certain things, like very early on I was interested in Edgar Cayce, and I wasn't, you know, this was in high school. And I wasn't at the place I needed to be to get anything out of it. And so I didn't. And I sat inside, and I came back to it years later. And I find I do that with a lot of things. And but I think, you know, the most important thing is to let, I firmly believe that you're navigating by your intuition and having the confidence to do that is kind of an ongoing struggle, I think. But especially when it comes to spiritual study, I absolutely believe that's the best curriculum is, you know, your own higher self.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm kind of laughing because I did the same thing with Edgar Cayce in high school. I read I Am a River and a bunch of stuff by Edgar Cayce. And for me, it did inspire me and it did speak to me, but it was on this much more global kind of a level. So it was just kind of like, wow, kind of thing, you know what I mean? And I've gone back to it and gotten, you know, looked at it again and you know, delved in a little deeper. And I think that that's what, you know, picking up a book again allows us to do is notice the changes in ourselves so that, you know, we can go to the place in that knowledge or that information that's really steeped with the richest intuitive piece for where we're at now.
Right. It's an interesting exercise, too, to reread a book that was meaningful to you in the past. I think it tells you a lot about yourself. And I think the Edgar Cayce in high school thing, it must be almost universal. Because I've talked to so many people who say that. I read Edgar Cayce in high school, and he's not easy to understand. You know, the readings and the syntax, it's a tough read.
Yeah.
And luckily, there's a lot of people who have the patience to study the readings and write about them. And you know, I've read a lot of that stuff. And also on the ARE website, you know, the membership is really reasonable for the online membership, and that they have all the readings available online, which I think is great. And you can search by topic and go in and read little bits and pieces of things and digest them and apply them. And but I find Edgar Cayce just very accurate. I think that's the main thing, you know, and I'll even you know, I'll become interested in things and I'll think, well, what did Edgar Cayce have to say about this? And I'll look it up and it more often than not resonates with me.
Awesome. And, for people who are interested, that ARE website, is that something where you're reading along with other people or is it interactive or not?
Well, the website itself, it has a lot of great stuff on it, like videos and articles, and I think his health database is accessible to everyone, whether you have a membership or not. But it's mostly, you know, the database of the verbatim readings on the website, and I think it's edgarcayce.org. And but they do also on Facebook. The ARE has a book club, which is interactive, and I participate in that, and I enjoy it.
Awesome, awesome. So Edgar Cayce did a lot of work around past life regression and that sort of thing. What's your connection with that? I know that you've dealt with it a lot on your blog and you've written about that topic.
Right, yeah. Past life regression and past life experience does interest me. I think what I find most interesting, though, is the life between life work that's done by Michael Newton and other hypnotherapists, and that's where they're actually regressing people to the interim period between incarnations. And Journey of Souls is just a fascinating book where Michael Newton was a conventional hypnotherapist, and he kind of stumbled upon this by accident. And one of the reasons the book was so meaningful to me was because I had this amazing spiritual dream that I did not understand. And after I read his book, again through resonance, the things he was saying about, you know, about the spirit world and stuff, what that is the way I came to understand that dream. And so it was a kind of a cool synchronicity. I'm like, okay, now I get it. Now I know what it was about. And so I'm real interested in that. You know, I mean, I think, and that, you know, has been kind of a reoccurring topic in the blog.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. I know you cover a lot of other things in the blog as well. I mean, I know that you cover work on stones and work on tarot and angelic energies, and it's just the gamut of really, really information that's steeped in intuitive energies. And what did your journey like that about that look like? Where did you kind of, I always think of, in my own tarot classes, I always think about how you crack the deck uniquely, you know, so you start to look at archetypes that really, really appeal to you, and then that journey feels a little more easy to take if you start where the energy is really ripe for you. When you started doing this intuitive work and connecting with spirit in this way, what was the first catalyst? What was the first thing that really, really sparked your energy?
Well, yeah, I guess probably my first, it's hard to say because it goes way back, you know, I mean, it goes mm-hmm. back to early childhood. I was kind of an odd kid, but I was very interested. I grew up in a completely secular family, but was always very fascinated with the Bible. So I read the Bible on my own when I was really pretty young and didn't really have anyone to talk to about it. So gave it a lot of thought, you know, so that was probably a catalyst. And also, you know, I had experience with, I was always able to sense spiritual energy. And when I was really young, I thought everyone could. And I remember trying to explain that, you know, the non-physical sense of someone, you know, that I would get to another kid. And they're looking at me like, you know, what are you talking about? But probably the first kind of unusual experience for me was after my grandmother passed and having a clear, very, very clear, you know, knowing that she was present in the room. And you know, a lot of my experiences were kind of organic, kind of spontaneous things. And it was just a series of things. You know, I had dreams having to do with past life, and I had experiences of hearing, which still occasionally happens to me, paranormal, you know, phenomena. And, you know, every time I would kind of get away from it and be into this is my life, working for a living and getting ahead, and, you know, something else would happen and kind of take me back.
Awesome, awesome. So really, your experience with metaphysics was kind of shaped by the paranormal, it sounds like.
I think it was. I mean, I think that, you know, very early on, I connected with the energy of people and with places and felt, you know, a very strong pull, you know, towards certain things. And came to understand that not everybody, you know, and it's my belief that everybody feels that stuff or can if they want to, or maybe want to is the wrong word, if they pay attention. But, you know, I did come to realize early on that not a lot of people were paying attention. And it was a little isolating, you know, I think. And I got involved, you know, in different, you know, spiritual groups and religious activities and stuff, but I was always, you know, I never really fit in. And I've come to realize over the years that not fitting in is okay, that, you know, having a unique path is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. awesome. It's so cool how I think that it's easy for people to discount their own unique journey or, you know, to not be able to find their way within that. And I just think it's great how you recognize that it's okay to have your own path and not fit in with everyone and not fit in with everything that makes you unique.
Well, thanks. I mean, I have to say, honestly, that's kind of something I've come into pretty recently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think as even going back probably 3 or 4 years, I was, you know, kind of wishing to be a little more conventional, you know. And but I've gotten past that, I guess.
Yes. I think that, like, In Jungian languaging, there's like this idea that it's so important to get out of the way of the ego and move toward what the universe has planned for you, which has so little to do with your controlling anything. You know, it just has to do with moving in a way where you make yourself available for where the energy is. And I just really think that that's kind of what you're talking about, you know. And I think that in midlife, we all struggle with how different we're going to be or what kind of group we're going to belong to. And we all have to get to a place where it's okay just to be yourself and show up the way that you do. And I don't think that the culture, you know, gives much support for that journey. So it can be kind of an isolating journey. I think it's cool to realize that that's okay, you know, that's okay if you do it on your own and you do it in a solitudinal way if it brings you where you need to be.
Right. I think you're absolutely right that it's often a control issue. And, you know, when people talk about ego, you always think of, you know, your first thought is egotistical, you know, and, you know, someone who's very focused on, you know, kind of selfishness and stuff. But a big part of ego is wanting to control, I think, too, your reality and adopt a certain identity and be rigid and you know, put forth a certain, you know, a certain kind of persona and stay with that. And it's counter to, you know, our best intuition. You know, I think nothing kills intuition as much as like a controlling attitude.
I think, though, that ego also gets a bad rap in metaphysical culture because in reality, I think ego is such an important thing to develop at a certain stage in development so that we have good boundaries. But then in midlife, the job, of course, is to get rid of ego, you know, to not get caught in the rigidity that maybe we needed that structure when we were younger to, you know, propel us into whatever activities we were going to be or to develop our persona and our sense of self. But then later on, it's about being able to shed that.
Right. Well, yeah, I think it's a structure, you know, and it does absolutely serve a purpose, and we need ego, and we need our ego self, and we need to be a certain person at work and a certain person with our kids, and you know, it's very good to be able to slip into that, like, okay, I'm in this situation, time to be professional. And we all need that. But I think what happens is when people lose their perspective and they over-identify, which is really easy to do and kind of safe to do.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And that I think that all of these intuitive connections and tools and stuff help us hopefully become more aware of, you know, our relationship to that so that we can really be present and use ritual and magic and synchronicity to kind of escape that need to control things.
Right, absolutely. And,
awesome. Awesome, cool. Well, I know that you have a particular affinity for stones and crystals and that is work that you really have been drawn to. How did you get into that and what's that look like for you?
Well, yeah, I do. And I'm kind of like a late bloomer when it comes to crystals. I always thought I'm sort of a late bloomer when it comes to most New Age things. I was, you know, really more traditional, you know, in terms of, maybe traditional is not the right word, but concerned with things that I felt were authentic, you know, and maybe more. But so anyhow, I always thought, kind of thought crystals were, you know, I didn't think it was particularly valid, you know, that there could be the energy of a stone. And I have a friend, a really good friend, who's you know, always been interested in, you know, different kinds of energy, you know, and crystals and, you know, scent and clearing and things like that. And she has, over the years, kept giving me crystals. And just, you know, I think at some point I just began to resonate with them. And and I also am very interested in color and the symbolism of color. And, you know, do a lot of meditations where I visualize color. And so that all kind of came together. And I really love crystals now, you know. I'm not sure I understand them, but I do think, you know, they contain energy and that it can be, you know, have a very beneficial effect on people.
Absolutely. I think on my own journey, I was a bit of a skeptic when it came to metaphysical things. I really wanted to believe and felt energy and that sort of thing, but when it would come to the books and it would be like, this stone means this and this is what this stone is for, I would be like, who says? You know, that's ridiculous. And I kind of put down all of the books and kind of went out and looked for the universe to reflect that back to me, you know, like, well, if green is really about love, how does that show up in the world, you know, and waited till I got more of a feeling that there were those correlations and those connections on an archetypal level. And I think that a good dose of skepticism is a really healthy thing because it helps us to go in the direction that we need to go in terms of trusting our intuition, so we don't just, you know, kind of land and say, oh, well, all of this is true, you know, because then it can be so overwhelming and not your own journey.
Right, and picking what's true for us. And I think one of probably the most moving things I read about crystals was in Eckhart Tolle's book, when he says that crystals are the, how does he put it? Crystals are the enlightenment of rocks. And I saw, and he talks a lot about evolution and enlightenment and evolutionary sense. You know, and I thought that was fascinating because, you know, when people talk about evolution of consciousness, evolution of the soul, ascension and all that stuff, I think it's very easy to forget that it's a natural process and that it happens in nature and it happens, you know, to people. And it's easy to forget that, I think, about metaphysics and intuition in general, that it is natural just because it's, you know, invisible, and mostly, you know, that doesn't necessarily put it into the realm of magic. It's still, to me at least, it's a natural process.
Yes. And I love how you bring out this idea that science has a mystical aspect to it, you know, that it is maybe beyond maybe our conventional way of looking at the world, or materialism, I think you mentioned earlier in the conversation, and that there's something that extends beyond material, the materialism of an object, and changes the way that we resonate and understand ourselves.
Yeah, and science is something, you know, I find it so fascinating that there are, you know, there are scientists that are really beginning to address some fascinating topics, and there are tough reads, definitely, But, you know, some of the work that's being done, like by Rupert Sheldrake with his studies on telepathy, and William Tiller and David Baum, you know, some of it is over my head, definitely. But it's wonderful that people like that are beginning to address these issues, you know, I
absolutely think.
And bodes well for the future.
Yes, and I think it changes the way that we look at what's possible. Like I think of Candace Pert or some of the people in What the Bleep Do We Know, and we're moving kind of from, I can't remember the word now, but a very materialistic way, I'm not going to get the word right, we're moving from one paradigm to another in terms of our science about what's true, the power of what's solid or the potential possible energy around something. And I know that the second term is the quantum field, where things move faster and messages get connected faster. And you know, biolocation, like that one person can pick up energetically what another person feels because on that quantum level things move differently. And I can't remember the other words for the old paradigm, but I think that that's what's happening in our culture to a large degree, and it's about people recognizing that that's happening, you know.
Right. And you know, I find science very challenging, you know, and mm-hmm. Actually in college, I got a Bachelor of Science degree in my field,
mm-hmm.
But I always found it challenging. It was never what
mm-hmm.
I liked. And now
mm-hmm.
I'm finding, you know, this intuitive side to science, which I think is really fascinating. And it's probably because most of us associate, you know, from our conventional education, you know, that mechanistic Newtonian kind of approach
That's
to things
it. Yes.
Like these are the laws. These are the laws
yes.
that govern what can and cannot be. And there is nothing else, you know, and now, you know, with, you know, I guess to extent Einstein to the degree I can understand his work through the interpretation of other people, you know, and moving into like quantum physics where they're talking about things, you know, that can't be objectively tested, you know, at least in the way we think of testing things objectively. And it's fascinating. And when I try to expose myself to this, I just, you know, I guess I take the same kind of intuitive approach to it. And, you know, I physics, I think, is fascinating, but it's mostly beyond me. But yet, you know, I think The Quantum Activist by Amit Goswami is a great film. And that's actually available on Netflix. And he does
What's
a wonderful
film?
Job. The Quantum Activist. He's a professor of physics, theoretical physics, and
mm-hmm.
he's an interesting person. I think he teaches in Oregon, and he's written a number of books, but he was brought up in India, so he has a little bit of that, you know, of that Eastern, you know, kind of, I think, affinity. For the metaphysical, and yet he has a very strong scientific background. And
mm-hmm.
and the quantum activist, and he's also very optimistic, which I appreciate, because with all the talk about 2012 and the different ideas people have, you know, it's easy to get pulled into, like, fear and negativity. And he
mm-hmm.
honestly believes, and most of the time I do too, that... you know, consciousness in society is evolving, and that we are a kinder, you know, more compassionate society than we were 100 or 200
mm-hmm.
years ago. And it's easy to focus on what's wrong and kind of forget that, but he does believe that we're consciousness is evolving. And it's kind of cool to hear that from a physicist, you know.
Absolutely,
Yeah, but I would definitely recommend that documentary. I got a lot out of it. I watched it a couple times. And he does cover stuff pretty quickly, but it's definitely... and I think he was in What the Bleep do we know?
Was he the guy who said, was he the guy who had the little cap on his head? He had a little, like, is that him? He's great.
Yeah, that kind of the,
so clear about this. I think that's the line. I've watched the movie probably 12 times, so.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah, he's so emphatic. He's a great character and a great energy. I will definitely check that out for sure. Yeah, I think that it's so amazing to realize that we're in this paradigm shift. And like you were talking about with 2012, I think not only can it become fear-based, but it can become so literal, our conversation about it. You know, like everything's going to fall apart in a literal way, you know, like, and I think that that kind of conversation about how literal something is back to that whole materialist realm. You know, this is the way this is going to fall apart. And, you know, and I think that when we're talking about consciousness, that's more in the realm of how we think creates how we feel and then what we make the world be. So it's kind of like a different way of approaching those questions.
Absolutely. And I believe in that. I mean, the whole law of attraction, the idea of that, I think, you know, as it has been presented by some people, you know, to me, it doesn't resonate with my belief system. But mm-hmm. definitely, I do believe that, you know, the law of attraction is operational in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, with 2012 and with some of the challenges that we face, they're real challenges and they're real dangers, and
mm-hmm.
you can't deny that. And I really admired the people. And for a while I was doing this because we had, here where I live in Northeast Pennsylvania, we had the natural gas fracking, you know, if you've seen
right.
the movie Gasland, and we,
yes.
that was happening here. And I got involved in, you know, in the environment and, you know, working against that, and I had to back away from it because
mm-hmm.
for me, you know, it was the negativity was too overwhelming. I admire the people who can do it, and people do need to engage on issues and stuff, but you know, it's not for everyone, definitely.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I'm laughing again because. I've
been involved politically for years and have had to back away from it too, because the way that the media shapes the discourse, you're not actually getting reality about so many of the issues. They're so pulled away from what's actually going on. They're so propagandized on both sides of the aisle. But then the other reason is because it can be such a negative discourse, and it can be so much about materialism. I really am caught up on this idea that you talked about materialism, because that seems to be really central to where our stumbling blocks are in terms of 2012 and what's going on right now, is that at the same time that these horrible, atrocious things may be happening, like fracking and the Keystone Pipeline and whatever else that looms on the horizon, we have to be able to have simple joys and simple pleasures and simple beauty and you know, create that synchronicity and that magical awareness in ourselves. And it can become so overwhelming when you get around people who are activists, which I know plenty of them, and some of them are wonderful, but that energy can kind of take over that kind of, this is the way it's going to be, and it's so literal and so materialist. And I've tried on my Facebook page to really kind of temper that conversation and, you know, still say, this is how I feel about this, and I'm going to post this, but here's me here at the same time. You know, I'm not just this fear-based conversation. So,
right, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I think is really interesting, too, right now in 2012, is it feels to me energetically like it isn't as black or white as it may have been before. Like there's another group of people who are kind of coming to the fore who are saying, no, this isn't going to work for us. But we're going to be happy and we're going to be in the moment and we're going to be present and we're going to notice that we don't care that much about stuff. And so it seems like the conversations are kind of overlapping and there's an excited energy here that isn't so, you're either an activist and a materialist or you're a metaphysical person and don't believe any of that is true. And that's exciting to me.
Yeah, it is to me, too. And I'm optimistic. I really am optimistic about the future.
I am, too.
And, you know, I think it's great when people, you know, make lifestyle choices which are consistent with it, are consistent, you know, with a positive outcome, you know, for the world. And yet, I'm like you. Like, I don't want that to be who I am, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not, you know, without being, you know, without, you know, necessarily commenting on other people, you know, it's just good to have, you know, like a multifaceted approach to life, I think, you know, and you not allow yourself to be too, you know, one-dimensional in regard to a belief system or issues and realize that there's something behind that, you know, that like being a vegan, for example, which is my new thing. I went from being like kind of a lackadaisical vegetarian to now I'm a vegan, you know. And that kind of automatically puts you in a group, you know, of people.
Yes.
and yet, to me, you know, the important thing is, I think, you know, where it's coming from. And and that's what I want to try to, you know, honor and develop in my life, you know, not the behavior or the identity, but, you know, the source, whatever the source might be is the important thing, I think.
Yes, I think your blog really does that really comes across in your blog. That really is a central tenet of what you get when you visit there. And I just think that's so wonderful because I think the world needs that so much right now. You know, that Jung called that holding the tension of the opposites, you know, so that we don't get stuck in one camp and say, I am this and I am not this, but how can I draw energies and life from these different places? And I think that your work really shows that.
Well, thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad it's that, you know, I mean, when I started the blog, it was a personal thing. I kind of didn't expect people to read it, and they have, and that's great. And, you know, and like I said, I feel like I've grown from doing it. And
awesome.
It's helped me clarify a lot of things that I don't think I would have clarified if I hadn't said, okay, I've read this book, now I have to write on it. And that automatically for me, you know, writing is a way of, you know, kind of stretching myself and clarifying.
Awesome. Well, we've just got about 10 more minutes. Is there anything else you want to share with the listening audience or focus that you have or anything you want us to know?
Well, you know, I would say probably my, you know, my primary thing is just, you know, that, you know, I hope that if, you know, anyone who visits the blog, that, you know, it's a point of departure for them, you know, and that there's enough stuff there that, you know, kind of, you know, and I try to have reference everything, and that, you know, it can be a point of departure for somebody to, you know, pursue what resonates with them, wherever that may take them.
Awesome. Well, it's definitely a point of departure for me, so I really thank you for being, oh yeah, absolutely. I really thank you for being on Inner Voice Intuitive Hour tonight. And if people want to get a hold of you and follow your blog, get a reading, connect in a deeper way, how do they do that, Barbara?
You can just go to thenewagereview.com. My contact information is there on the blog. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. And, you know, I love to get comments on the blog. And, you know, my email is thenewagereview@gmail.com. And I always answer emails. And I'm not really reading right now. I've kind of stepped away from that. But, you know, I'm happy to discuss things, to take suggestions for topics, and I want to hear from people.
Awesome. And just a note, and that is for all of us out there who write blogs, we want to hear what you think, what you have to say, how it you know, felt to you, what your story is too. So feel free to share comments on those blogs, and then we really create a metaphysical discourse, which is, you know, not just us telling you what we think, but you saying, well, this is what I'd like to see, or this is what's important to me, or this is what really resonated, and that's how we build community. So
it sure is, and it's great. And I know your blog, you know, I think you feel the same way I do. It's just great when you get a dialogue going on a post.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really affirming.
That feels a lot about, to me, that feels a lot like what's happening right now in the culture, is there's a dialogue going on that feels different than before. So it's kind of an exciting thing.
It is.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing the hour with Inner Voice, and thanks for sharing your wisdom and your insight and your stories.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it. And I'm going to be doing a chakras, probably revisiting the chakra series on the blog.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, so that's coming up probably in the next few weeks.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I'm wishing you great writing energy for that and connecting energy.
Thank you very much, Jenny. And thank you for having me.
Take good care, Barbara. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That was Barbara Graver. Check out her wonderful, wonderful blog. Let me bring it up here again so I can get it to you. It is the New Age Review, and it is a wonderful, thorough exploration of everything metaphysical and intuitive. It's a great way to ask some of these questions of yourself in terms of the way that you show up around some of these energies, and I just cannot recommend it more highly. I also want to, in the last few minutes, promote something on global spiritual studies. I had the opportunity to have Pamela Steele, who did the Steele Tarot deck. I'm not going to get that right because sometimes the details and words don't come to me, but I'm running over here right now to get this deck so I can tell you the actual name of the deck, the Steel Wizard Tarot. It's wonderful. She's added some other archetypes into it, and it's a great way to connect with the tarot and to connect with a woman who's just made a wonderful deck. Roxy Sim was also on the show about a month and a half ago and shared her deck, and together they are doing some wonderful webinars for folks who are interested in designing their own deck. They take you all the way through the process from how to design the images, how to keep your energy up, how to connect with your intuition in that process, how to create a guidebook that goes along with your unique deck, and also how to promote and promote your work when you're done. So that's on Global Spiritual Studies. It's Roxy Sim and Pamela Steele creating a tarot deck. And I believe that there are, I want to say, seven or eight sessions. There is a fee for them, but I guarantee it's a wonderful, wonderful ride, and it will help you connect with your own intuition and your own creativity. Also look for, in the very near future, just talked with Pamela this morning. She is making a deck right now for children, which I have to tell you, when I was talking to her about this, my heart leapt, because in another lifetime, well, this lifetime, but in another lifetime, I was a Montessori teacher, and just the idea of getting archetypes, stories into the hands of children in a way where they know that the way that they develop their lives has to do with who they'll be, so that there's that mystical, spiritual connectedness when you're really, really young. And if you don't get it from your parents and you don't get it from your inner spirit, sometimes it can create kids who are just very, very focused on things that sometimes lack life. So I think that this is a wonderful, and you know, then open up to really being addicted to popular media and just losing out on their own creative journeys and just allowing other people to decide what's true for them. So I really, really encourage you to listen to that show and to connect with that show. I am writing a book right now on intuitive archetypal tarot reading. I worked on the archetypes of the trickster and the anima and the animus today, and really excited because right now Gemini is in, the moon is in Gemini, so it's a great time for communication, and boy, that was true this morning. And I just got so excited, I thought, wow, this is the next book, to write a book for children about working with the tarot and working with archetypes and breaking down that very, very big word that has so much to do with the way we live our lives, so much to do with the way we story our journeys, so much to do with a goodness of fit and who we draw near in our circle and how we're able to manifest things and who we decide that we have to let go of energetically because they're not good for our karmic purpose and they don't help us grow. And all of those big, big questions that show up in archetypal psychology. So anyway, I'm so glad that you listened to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. I hope you got something out of it. For CBUS folks, pop on over to the Inner Voice Intuitive Tarot Guidance Meetup Group. That's a great way to connect with the energies of not only tarot, but archetypal tarot, Jungian-based tarot, and intuition. We're starting up a group there, and eventually I will be having meetups at my home, and so I encourage you to check that out and encourage you to really look at how archetypes do show up in all of these different metaphysical realms. So thank you so much for listening, and hope it spoke to you. I'll be on next week with I Don't Know What, and then we'll have Kanta Bosniak the week after. So have a great evening, everybody. Go make magic, create magic, inspire magic, feel magic, because that's really what we're here for. Take good care. Bye now.